I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The writer Elise Lee Goldenberg joins me now. She's a writer of young adult books, and we talk about her latest, The Song of Hadaria, and its genesis in the Jewish folk tale she heard from her grandmother. We touch on the necessity of folklore and how fairy tales shape how a lot of readers view the world with their lessons. We also talk about how some of those necessary lessons get lost on a lot of us as we get older. Ms. Goldenberg has done a marvelous job in her work of capturing these stories from her grandmother for a wider audience. I get Elise to tell us about her grandmother, the horrors of the Holocaust visited upon her family, and the stories she's passing on to her own children. It's also timely we look at what's happening today as we're seeing hate in the discourse and in places in the world today. Visit EliseLeeGoldenberg.com on how to get her books. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Toronto today, Elise Lee Goldenberg. Ms. Goldenberg, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Well, what's the title of the book that's out now?
Right now, we have recently released a book called The Song of Vengeance, which is book two of the Dybbuk Scrolls trilogy. The first book in that series is The Song of Hadaria.
When you start a book, did you set out to start a series?
Originally, this came from an idea I had a while back where I wanted to write a fantasy novel based on Jewish and Eastern European folklore. And as I started writing the first book, after a long period of research, I realized that it would work better as a three-part series. So this one was, yes, set out to be a series.
Yeah, and so when you have the goal of retelling these folk tales, this folklore that you know, that's your heritage, where are these books set?
These books are set both... some of it takes place here in, well, for me, here is Toronto, and the rest of it takes place in a world that I created, which is loosely based upon the small communities that my grandmother grew up in Poland and Czechoslovakia. But the world is called Hadaria, and it's a world populated by both people and magical creatures.
And fairy tales have been constantly retold, haven't they? I mean, there's been great innovation generation to generation, but at the core, at its heart, are these lessons. And I'm assuming, having just looked at your book, so that's the case with what you've written.
And what do you
think they tell us about the present?
I think that the lessons of fairy tales and folk tales are universal. They teach you, the ones that we tend to remember and retell more often than not have a moral center where those who do right get rewarded and those who stick up for the little people, so to speak, they end up the heroes in the stories. And it's this idea that anybody could become a hero. You don't have to be a knight or a princess or anything like that. It's especially in the Jewish folk tales that I grew up upon. It's the tailors, the students, the musicians, the artists that end up reaping the most rewards, because even the smallest person can make the biggest change in the world.
And I guess these are lessons that we know, but we tend to forget, don't we?
Yeah.
And what do you think that says about us? I guess it says more about people than I suppose the times that we're living in. I mean, every generation seems to forget these important lessons, these important moral stories that we should know.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with how our focus changes as we grow up. I mean, as kids, we have the time to revisit these stories over and over and over again, and we tend to read the same ones that we love multiple times, and as a kid, no one thinks twice about picking up a book of fairy tales or folk tales and just reading them for entertainment. And so the message is always fresh for us. But as we get older, there tends to be a shift in what we focus on. And we focus on our careers, we focus on building a family, and we focus on the more material things in our lives. And as a parent myself, I now have the opportunity to revisit these stories through fresh eyes as I tell them to my own children. And it's been a wonderful refresher course for me to have to do that.
And I guess it harkens back to memories when you first heard these stories from your grandmother, right?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I'm loving the opportunity to do it for something other than research, to do it because my kids love listening to the stories that I grew up on.
Would you tell us about your grandmother and I guess just how important she found it to tell her family, yourself, for example, these stories that I guess were passed down from her grandparents, right?
I think so. She never really told me when she first heard them. I had the good fortune of having my grandmother, my booby, as it were. She lived with me my whole life, and she was basically a second mother to me, helping to raise me. And her telling me these stories was a big part of my growing up. And I think she loved the fact that I loved to listen to them. And so for her, it was kind of a source of joy to tell everything to me. And it was not just the stories, it was also her superstitions and her customs and culture that I grew up with. And I maintain all of that today. And I think it was a way of her keeping her past alive in through a type of storytelling that brought about happy memories for her.
Well, when would she tell you these stories? Would this be like, you know, just before bed, things like that?
When I was younger, it was just before bed.
Yeah.
And as I grew up, I would start to seek them out. And she eventually moved from the second floor of our house to the first floor, where she had a room that she kind of made her own. And I would go and seek her out and sit her down and ask her questions and ask her to tell me certain things again for what was probably the 300th time at that point. I don't even know. But I would find her and I would commit what she said to memory.
And I guess when you're really young, you seek these stories out for, I guess, entertainment or just to pass the time even. Mm-hmm. When did you find out for yourself that there was something more than just, say, an interesting story, but some important lesson here? I mean, did she tell you right away that listen to this because this is something you'll need?
It would usually go along with the moral at the end. She'd be like, let me tell you this story tonight. And then at the end, it would be like, and what do you think you could learn from this? And so we would discuss it. I don't think she did that the first few times because I was probably very young. I don't truly remember the first time I heard half of the stories. But I do remember that she told me one day when I was trying to redecorate my room and move my furniture around that I wasn't allowed to set up my bed with the feet facing the door because the Dybbuks would come in the night and steal my soul. Mm. So that was the first time I probably realized that she took the superstitious aspect of it a little more seriously than my mother ever did or even I did at the time.
Yeah. And so when you're telling your kids the stories of superstition and the sort, I guess kids at any age believe this stuff, or I mean, it stays with them, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. I'm also reading my kids the Harry Potter series right now, and they're convinced that wizards are real and that when they turn 11, they're going to get their Hogwarts letters. At this moment, I don't have the heart to let them down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus for kids, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. When you tell your children these stories now. Do you find, I don't know how to put this, but do you find you're evoking your grandmother for them so that they get to know her?
Yeah, I do. And I tell them that this is where I first heard the story and this is who told it to me. And I'm making sure that in one way, these stories are my way of keeping her alive in my life.
Yeah. And so do they have questions about what she was like?
All the time. Yeah, they ask me a lot about that because they know their grandmothers both quite well right now. And they're just like, so you had one too. What was she like? Was she the same as ours? And did she look the same? Did she dress the same? Did she cook the same? Did she do tea parties with you? Was it just stories or did she like movies? And so it becomes a whole discussion with them. And they're fascinated by this idea of family history and people that are no longer with us.
And I guess at the core of your telling of these stories, not only with your family, but for the rest of us as readers, you really do capture her in the writing, don't you?
Yeah, she was very much the inspiration for the series, and that's partly why the characters talk a lot about this idea of grandparents being the keepers of our history and that it's important to listen to them while you have them around.
Yeah, I guess we lose sight of that, don't we? I mean, because when we view them as children, they're, usually, well, depending on the relationship that one has with a grandparent, I mean, they can be quite severe or they can be very friendly. But at some point, you know, you want to make your own friends and you tend to dismiss them. And I guess a lot of people in our society is geared to dismiss older people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lucky in that my best friend had a similar relationship with her grandfather in that case. And we would always go on movie dates with him and let him choose. And he was the opposite of what you would think an old person was.
Yeah.
Between the two of us, we would joke around and call him Grumpy Zadie. But when he would choose the movie, he said that the louder it was, the better. And the more explosions it had, even more so. And he was like in his 80s taking us to like the Bourne Identity and all these things like that. Well, when we chose the movies, we'd be like, but we're going with him. We should choose something nice and quiet, like The Notebook.
Yeah.
And he would get really frustrated with us.
Yeah. The role of girls in society, I mean, is that something that you talk about in the series?
It is. And I also talk about that in my other young adult fantasy series, the Sitnalta series, which revolves around a princess trying to figure out her role in society, where girls typically have to take a step back and be quiet and demure, and she's the opposite of that. I like to write about that sort of thing because I like this idea of having a strong female protagonist as the center of a story. And the girls in my stories, this idea of a female friendship is something that is so important to me, and my friends were extremely important to me growing up and still are, being people that you can rely on and have as a support. And I don't think you see enough of that in young adult fiction and young adult television shows. It's not all about fighting over boys and love triangles and things like that. Sometimes your friends are the people who are there for you more often than not and supporting you through the trials and tribulations of growing up, and to put a friendship and a relationship like that as the spotlight of the series and as something that girls would want to emulate, I found that very important to me.
And have you heard from readers as to how, say, boys read these characters? I mean, I would assume that when you're at a young age, it really doesn't matter whether the protagonist is a girl or a boy. I mean, it's only when you get much older that it's of concern to some people, right?
Well, even then, I don't see why it should be a concern.
Yeah.
I mean, people are people, right, at the end of the day. And for me, that was most important. I mean, yes, their sex was important to me in crafting the character, but in the end, it's about a good story, a good adventure. And I think that it should be readable for either girls or boys. I mean, these are characters that I hope readers can look up to regardless of the sex of the person reading the book.
When you write about the challenges of friendship, did you offer, say, lessons as to things we ought to know better about cultivating the right friendship, say?
The right friendship is something I think people struggle with even well into their adulthood.
Even with the friends that they have, right?
Yeah. For me, the right kind of friendship, I think the right kind of friend is someone that you can be yourself with and not be afraid of judgment. I mean, the friends that I kept from childhood till now are the ones that I can be an idiot with and know that it won't make a difference in our friendship, that I can laugh with, that I can joke around with, and that I know will be there no matter what. I mean, I have some friends that, honestly, because as adults, you grow up, you grow your own lives, create your own families and everything. It doesn't matter if we haven't seen each other for months on end. If we get together, it's like the last time we saw each other was yesterday. And just someone that you can talk to and trust. For me, in a friendship, trust is very important.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to the initial questions I had as we started the conversation. These are things we should know. We ought to know, but we tend to forget, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
I mean, we get attracted to certain people that mm-hmm. we shouldn't.
And these are all very basic lessons that you can find, once again, back to the beginning, in fairy tales and folk tales.
Yeah. Your grandmother obviously told you stories about her growing up, and, you know, it was a terribly tumultuous time in world history, and a fatal time for mm-hmm. members of her family. I mean, she lost members of her family. Her father and a brother, I believe.
Yeah, her father and her brother Nathan were both killed.
Yeah, during the Holocaust. Would you, I guess, like your own kids, would you be interested in them and ask her questions about them growing up?
Huh?
Would you ask questions of your grandmother when you were a kid, of them growing up? And you got to know them, I guess. She was very good at painting a picture, was she?
I have a younger sister and a younger brother, and my brother is very active in musical theater, and he sings, and he directs, and he writes, and performs, and does all sorts of amazingly artistic things. And we often wondered where that came from, because my booby would say that she used to sing until she got her tonsils out, and then the choir director made her just mouth the words. However, she would say that her brother Nathan, who's the one that died during the Holocaust, that he could sing like you wouldn't believe, that he was just incredible. And she would often talk glowingly about him and about her father, Herman, and what a wonderful man he was and a wonderful head of the family and everything. And I feel like I got to know them through her stories and the pictures that she was able to bring to Canada after the war and everything. So I think that now that she's gone, it's up to me and it's up to my mother and the family that we have here to kind of keep them alive in our own ways and make sure that they're not forgotten.
What do you make of the current culture and political climate where, I mean, throughout history, I mean, it's been easy to dismiss. I mean, there have been, you know, people that dismiss the Holocaust, you know, deniers. Mm-hmm. But in this current political climate. It just seems easier. And so I guess this is a great place in the conversation to think about, you know, what we shouldn't forget.
Yeah. Honestly, looking at the state of things today, it terrifies me. And I know that there is a fairly large group of people who will hear that comment and laugh at me about it. And you know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
The thing is, and this is why I'm very thankful to my publisher for giving me the chance to do this. At the end of each of the three books in this series, I write a bit of her story to kind of keep it alive and get it out there that this happened, these people were real, and we're including pictures of her and stuff like that. To see the fact that there are actually Nazis walking the streets and saying comments about Jews and other minorities and feeling that they have the right to do this and the right to stir this up again. My Bubby's father and his brother, she and my mom and her other brothers were all put on a transport to Siberia during the Second World War, where they were taken to a labor camp. Her father and her brother felt that they were safe to stay behind, and they hid, figuring that even if they were caught, the Germans were their friends. They would never hurt them. That's what everyone there believed right up until it was too late. It'll blow over. The words are just words. Bad things happen, they go away, and no one would ever think that the Nazis would ever do what they did. And it ended up costing them and so many others their lives. I mean, if we don't stop things before they escalate to that point, if we don't look at these people who are saying these comments and doing these things against other groups, then we're no better than them. We see something wrong, you speak out, you stop it. That's what I firmly believe, and that's what I hope I'm raising my kids to believe.
Yeah, it's curious, isn't it, that we forget how history repeats itself, and if we're not careful, it can repeat itself. It certainly in the terrible negative ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The challenge of writing for younger readers, I mean, one assumes that you just write shorter or, say, use smaller words. You write down. But it's not that, is it? I mean, it's a certain skill set that one needs to write for young people.
For me, I approach it in that the only things are that I make the characters younger. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of a young adult book because that age where you're growing into the adult you're going to become, like, those choices affect so much as you grow. But and that's why I like writing for that age, this idea of writing someone just on the cusp of adulthood. It's such a time of change in a person. But the only things I really censor in myself to write to young audience is the language. And obviously, I don't do any graphic sex scenes or things like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, a story is a story. And I think that kids can understand a lot more than we tend to give them credit for.
Yeah. I mean, they are savvier, aren't they, than we assume them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess we were like that as kids as well.
Yeah.
I mean it's the things that we picked up in the subtext and that we didn't hear, if you will.
Exactly.
That we remember even to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my own kids, I have a 6-year-old triplet, 2 boys and 1 girl.
Uh-huh.
And the things that they come up with and the things that they understand and what they see and what they read and what they hear about is just astonishing.
And you are... about to release a new book, and then you'll continue with this series, or will you start something else, another project, say?
I have my Sit and Alter series that I'm working on. The first 4 books of that are out right now, and the 5th one is due out in the fall, and I'm working on a 6th and 7th. And the 3rd and last book in the Dybbuk Squirrels trilogy is also coming out this fall.
Yeah. And you mentioned having triplets. There's 6. Still, I'm assuming, I'm not a parent, but still a handful. Yeah. How do you find the time to write?
Luckily, they go to bed at 8:30, so I have my evening.
Yeah.
And they're also in grade 1, so I do a lot of my writing while they're at school. The summer tends to be a bit of a write-off, because unless they're in day camp, which I don't do for the whole summer,
yeah.
I spend my time with them, and I use the time to have experiences with them. And occasionally, I'll jot down an idea or two that they just give to me, but it's kind of a fallow time for my writing.
What do you think your grandmother would have made of these books?
I like to think that she'd be proud of them. They are definitely the type of story that she would have liked. They were the type of story that she would tell. And she used to tell me that she believed that I could do anything, and the short stories that I would give her that I did for school and things like that, she always loved them. She actually read the first version of Sit in Alta, which started as a short story that I wrote when I was 13.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. Well, you're doing great work in terms of not only entertaining the audiences and educating them and providing these important lessons, as I said, that we all need to remember, but as well as cultivating the heritage of Helen and of your entire family, and to do that is just such a gift, not only for members of your family now and beyond, but for us, the reader. So congratulations and continued good luck with your work, Elise.
Well, thank you very much.